Thank you very much. I'm sorry to have interrupted that nice set of conversations that were going on. I'm Tony Massey, the provost at McGill, and it's a great pleasure to have all of our new faculty, many of our new faculty members here today for this orientation session. It was purposely designed to give you time to have those informal conversations as well as to have the services fair and a bit of lunch. So we hope you're all ready now for the afternoon session. Before we begin the formal proceedings, I want to take this opportunity to invite Principal Heather Monroe Bloom to come and welcome you. She's been the principal of McGill for 8 years, and we have seen enormous changes in the way in which we think about our academic priorities and in the way in which we perform as an institution thanks to her leadership. Every single day, all of us need to have the security that there is a team on which we can rely and leadership that is dependable and credible, and Professor Monroe Bloom brings that to us every single day. So here's the principal.
Thank you very much, Tony. We have an exceptional provost. We have a great team of colleagues here at McGill, and one of the things that characterizes McGill is that we have a very distributed academic leadership and a great universal commitment to collaboration, collegiality, and to working together to do everything we can to make this a supportive working environment and an environment where everyone can do their best teaching and scholarship and research, and where our students are supported at the highest level. Je veux dire bienvenue à McGill, bienvenue à Montréal pour vous tous. It is a wonderful place that you've chosen to come to, some of you from across the mountain, some from overseas. We're delighted that you've chosen us and that we've chosen you as well. And we're very committed to your success, to supporting you in every way, and the provost has a wonderful team of colleagues who aim to do just that with the support of all of us. Vice Principal Goldstein on the research side, myself, Vice Principal DeGrappa on the administration and finance side, and on and on. It's a very special year as well for you to be joining McGill. It's our 190th anniversary year, and we're founded in a great tradition of the Scottish Enlightenment. Our founder, James McGill, was a pioneer, you can tell by his name, from Scotland. Back in the 1700s, he came in and worked in his native tongue of English and French and local Aboriginal languages. He was a fur trader. He grew to be a great statesman, and in a particularly visionary act, on his deathbed, made a bequest to found a secular university that would reach the highest standards, that would build this great continent. Canada wasn't then a country, and that would meet the highest standards of teaching and research for a great comprehensive university by international standards. We were founded on a college of medicine, and so it's no surprise that roughly half of our academic research scholarly enterprise touches somewhere on the life and health sciences more broadly, but having been an adult at 6 research-intensive universities, McGill is particularly characterized by the collegiality that I described. We work together, we make our decisions together, taking best judgment, by the interdisciplinarity that comes from the ground up, and where the deans don't have their elbows out, which I found to be unusual in some of the other fine universities that I've been at, where we really work to foster your ability to move across disciplines and domains, pursuing your intellectual academic interests. We are also characterized by a dual and quite interacting commitment to research and teaching. And this is rather unusual for research-intensive universities. It is a hallmark of McGill, and it's one that other research-intensive universities, including our sister institutions in the Association of American Universities, look to emulate. And then we are unusual as a public university. We are a deeply publicly purposed university, with our strongest support coming from the Quebec and federal governments. And at the same time, we have roughly 25% of our students who are graduate students. That's unique in Canada and the research intensive universities. We have 55% of our students roughly who come from Quebec, of whom about 6,000 have French as their first language, reflecting the rich cultural environment that we exist in here in Quebec. And for those of you who haven't got any French in your background, I really urge you to take advantage of opportunities to learn French in your time here at McGill. We have students from every region of Canada, from Iqaluit in the far north to east and west, farthest regions of the country. And then we have over 150 countries from which our students, our full-time students, come directly in every year. So it is a global population. It is serving locally. It's serving nationally. It's making great contributions on the world stage. And so we take great pride in what we do. We take great pride in our community. And as you have chosen to come here and we've chosen you, I really urge you to reach out beyond your own particular department or program to meet with and work with faculty from across the university, to encourage your students to do the same thing, to let us know how we can help you, to help each other as you come into the university. And we, of course, are proud of the fact that we rank in the top 20 universities in the world, that we rank number one in Canada within the research-intensive university category of universities that have medical schools. But what we do and how we comport ourselves within the university is a big part of our success on the national and international stages. And so as we have recruited, you know, roughly 100 professors year over year in the last decade, an extraordinary renewal of the university, I really urge you to work with us to maintain and grow those great values that have made McGill the wonderful university that it is, and at the same time to work with us to innovate in ways that make your teaching absolutely progressive and current, that help you to think about your scholarship and your research in ways that will really allow you to be the leaders that we've chosen you to be. And as an incentive for you to work in this kind of way that has you not elbows out and not protecting your own domain, but following the McGill tradition of outreach, collaboration, and engagement with our McGill community, I'm making an offer to you from the principle that the provost will pay for, which is that if you meet someone here today who you didn't know before from outside of your department or program, with whom you'd like to have a further conversation, if you go for lunch or dinner of a reasonable cost, we will pick it up, because we know it will enrich your time here. It'll enrich your scholarship and your academic contribution, and you'll be happier knowing how wonderful colleagues outside of your program are, as well as how great those within are. So let me just finish thanking you for choosing us, congratulating you on being chosen, and wishing you every success with your careers here at McGill, which we're committed to having as successful as they can be. Bonne chance. Merci.
Thank you very much, Heather. Thanks. Mm-hmm. Which is going to be showing up there?
Yeah.
Right. Okay. As the principal said, McGill is a really interesting and, I think, very unique place, because we place emphasis on the intersection of our research and teaching. And today's program for new faculty is designed to give you a sense about what it is we think the top academic priorities are for the university, how we want to support you in your research, and how we can support you better in understanding teaching and teaching and learning in this kind of an environment, and what the collegial atmosphere really means. And so we put together a program this afternoon that touches on those areas. Once you've been hired at McGill, of course, the question is, how do you continue to remain an active and successful professor here, and what can we do to ensure that for you? So it's really a great pleasure for me to have this opportunity to present to you this program this afternoon and to start with the strategic priorities of the university and our aspirations. The principal pointed out that as a research-intensive university, we put a great deal of emphasis on inquiry-based activities. So research is really a defining characteristic of the university. This is a slight modification to what is our true mission statement, but it is a statement about the things that we hold to be really important. We are a research-intensive, student-centered university with a commitment to excellence when judged against the highest international standards and with an enduring sense of public purpose. Those are the characteristics that define this institution in this context. And let me just go through a bit with you each of those elements. When we say that McGill is research intensive, we mean that inquiry permeates everything that we do. It has to have a connection as well to your teaching. Your research and your teaching should be intimately connected. You shouldn't see a large gap between the things you do your research on and the teaching that you do in the classroom and, of course, the supervision that you provide to graduate students. So inquiry-based is what we used to refer to as one of the first I's in McGill. The second is that we're student-centered. And student-centeredness means that we have to think about the characteristics of our students. We are an international university. In publicly funded universities, we're really unique. 1 in 5 of our students comes from a country other than Canada. 1 in 5 of our students, a little more than that, come from a province other than Quebec. 3 in 10 of our students speak a language other than English or French as their first language. And what I've just said about the students is actually magnified when we think about you as our professoriate and the way in which over the last 10 years we have renewed our academic core, the core of the university being the professoriate. We've renewed that the professoriate by having great international competition for the positions that you all hold. We've brought in professors from 60 countries around the world. We have they've been educated in a dozen around the world. We have brought back Canadians. We've brought in international professors. We've spent a lot of time thinking about academic recruitment in order to have that link, though, between the kind of student body we have, competitive, highly motivated, really good achieving students before they come, and value is added to them by having you, the people who do research at our university, also be intimately involved in the educational programs we offer, whether that's at the undergraduate level or in the supervision of our graduate students. The principal noted a commitment to excellence. And part of it was that invitation for a reasonably priced lunch or dinner is to encourage interdisciplinarity. You will know what reasonable is, because if you wouldn't pay for it yourself, you wouldn't ask me to sign an expense report. But the issue in terms of the commitment to excellence is we think that the things that are done at McGill are at the cutting edge in most of the disciplines in which we have a presence. We want it to be that way. We want you to feel competitive, but the competitiveness goes along with cooperation. So we want to also make sure that there's the opportunity for interdisciplinarity. So if you think about the things that McGill does, we have inquiry-based, and we're interdisciplinary, and we're international. Those are the three fundamental I's that make it easy to remember our characteristics as a university. There's a fourth one that Vice Principal Goldstein, I'm sure, is very fond of now, and that is innovation. The kinds of things we do are innovative in both senses of that word. They're innovative in terms of the programs of study and the research that we conduct at the basic level, and they're meant to have a societal impact. So the innovation is another one of the aspects that we have. And if you walk around the campus, I'll just finish with the fifth I, and that is infrastructure developments. We have been fortunate to get knowledge infrastructure program money and deferred maintenance money to really try to bring the campus up to the standards that will allow you to be internationally competitive in the things that you do. We have some overarching goals at McGill. First, we want to make sure that McGill consistently ranks among the top 10 publicly funded research-intensive universities worldwide. And in certain selected areas, we want to our performance to be unambiguous in terms of positioning McGill as a world leader. These are very important goals for us. We want to achieve them. We want to put you in a position to achieve your successes as professors that will help the institution maintain its reputation and its reach into the world. It doesn't really matter what type of ranking system is employed. And we don't live and manage the university by the ranking systems. But we do the kinds of things that we do, those five I's I mentioned earlier, because we think they're the right things to do, and they happen to coincide with some of the things that are considered important by ranking agencies. So whenever a ranking is done that is of a serious nature, whatever the criteria that are being used, we want McGill to be mentioned among the best. So it's really putting the emphasis on understanding. It doesn't matter what the scales are. What matters is McGill cannot be ignored. And that's how we want you to behave in terms of your performance as professors, both on the research and the teaching side. In addition, in order for us to do that, we've had to undertake, I mentioned earlier, the principal has asked us to do things in a different way over the last 8 years. We've had to undertake to achieve these plans by measuring our progress, by being unafraid to say where we're actually positioned, how well we're actually doing, and then to be able to adjust our roadmap in order to play to our strengths and to shore up our weaknesses. So these are the overarching goals that the university has in terms of its positioning. Back in 2006, I was asked to do two things when I first became the provost. The first was to make sure we had an academic plan. That's not to say that McGill never did planning. It did lots of planning. But as an institution, as a university-wide endeavor, we hadn't engaged in a systematic undertaking to understand what our strengths and our aspirations were. And it started with a bottom-up exercise that was matched later on with some top-down resource allocations. The bottom-up is really important. The university has very strong departments. The principal has told you it's distributed academic leadership. A lot of autonomy goes into the way in which your departments and local administrative units build up their strengths. We asked all of the deans to give me at the time an inventory of what the strengths were. And then I mapped them, collated them, and took the faculty plans and their indications of future directions and merged them into an academic plan that identified certain areas to which we then assigned additional resources. So the top down was basically oriented to from the bottom up. So first we saw what the strengths were, then we added it. The second objective the principal gave me was to be the chief budget officer of the university in addition to being the chief academic officer after the principal. So having responsibility for the resources meant we had to think about our academic plans in a multi-year fashion. We had to design a budget model that was multi-year in its orientation. And we got both of those things accomplished. We asked all of our deans to sign on to compacts or agreements with the central administration about the resources they would need and the deliverables that we could measure. So back to that earlier point. What has been the outcome of the first academic plan in 2006? There's been a substantial net increase in tenure-track positions. Just about 2003, 2004, we were sitting with about 1,200 tenure-track academic positions. Today, we have just over 1,600. So there's been a 30% increase in the size of the tenure-track appointments at McGill. We also wanted to make sure that there was good coordination between the VP Research and International Relations and the Office of the Provost in having academic plans and research plans that were coincident. So we wanted to make sure, and we have now, that in place. We've considerably increased the number of interdisciplinary programs that exist. We have a very attractive interdisciplinary neurosciences program that brings people together from across the campus. It's one of our strengths at McGill. Over 120 professors identify neuroscience as one of their specialties, and it cuts across every single faculty. The other thing we did is we instituted something called an Institute for the Public Life of Art and Arts and Ideas. So the humanities have a focus for their research. We've looked hard at green chemistry and nanotechnology and nanoscience. We're now looking at bioengineering, which also will cut across many disciplines. And we've also tried to make sure that we kept that alignment between always knowing what our strategic academic goals are and how we put resources to them. So these have been some of the achievements since then. But now that plan is over 5 years old, and we've begun a process of consultation. So it's exciting to have a new group of professors coming in who have new and fresh ideas who can help us to achieve some of the new strategic academic priorities. We're going to acknowledge and build on the strengths we had in 2006, but we also have to outline a strategy for how we sustain and further McGill's academic leadership in those areas where we're very well positioned to be world leaders, and where in all fields where we can measure ourselves against other research universities, we will perform excellently. And that means we're in the process of building a roadmap for the next 5 years. A couple of principles that we've been employing since we started this process last spring. First is to make sure that we have broad consultation and a mechanism for incorporating feedback. Second, we want to make sure that we're well coordinated with all other university plans. We have to submit a strategic research plan to Ottawa for our Canada Foundation for Innovation and our Canada Research Chairs. That research plan requires that we have a strategic plan on file. It can't be different from our academic plans at the university. We want them to be coordinated. We also want to continue to be unbiased in our analysis of where we stand and how far we can go. We have to measure our progress. It all has to be done within the context of financial constraints and a multi-year budget model. And therefore, we have to be willing to recognize the possibility that some things may be in contradiction and that we have to trade some things off for other things. It's a real consultation process that we want. I went the wrong way. So what are the objectives? First of all, we want to achieve new directions in faculty hiring, development, and retention. Just orienting you to being a new professor at McGill today, first session for this. Your faculties will probably run additional sessions. Your chairs should be helping you orient yourself to McGill. One of the things that we want to make sure is that as we establish our hiring plans, they're coordinated with all of our academic plans. We also want to think carefully about the linkage the principal mentioned in her opening remarks, research and teaching. We need to be innovative in the course delivery mechanisms that we have and in the design of our programs for students. She also mentioned we're fairly intensive as a university in Canada in terms of the percentage of graduate students we have. We have the highest proportion of individuals seeking doctorates of any university in the country. So we have to be sure that our graduate programs remain innovative and competitive and that we have funding in place for those students. Rosie Goldstein is in charge, VP Goldstein is in charge of our research initiatives, and we want to make sure that we're well positioned to use the strengths we have as a platform to launch into new transformative research initiatives. And we also want to make sure that all the support we receive for meeting our academic mission in teaching and research is supported by strong support staff and the work that they do for us. We also want to give everyone who has a job at McGill, regardless of whether they're academic or administrative and support staff, the opportunity to develop their careers and enhance their performance. The tools we need are measurement tools. We continually exchange data with the biggest 15 universities in the country. We have a planning and institutional analysis group led by Dr. Pierre Moreau, which helps us to compare to that group. Along with the University of Toronto, McGill is only one of two Canadian universities in the American Association of Universities, and we participate in that data exchange as well. So we want to have the tools available to help us do what I've called here academic analytics. We also want to make sure, since we have an enduring sense of public purpose, that we are providing service to Quebec, Canada, and the global community, and that's part of our international mission as well. The diversity in ideas doesn't lack at a university, but we want to make sure people feel encouraged in bringing that diversity forward, but we also want to make sure we reflect the communities, the worldwide community and the local community in terms of diversity and origin. And we also want to regain some of our positioning relative to our professional faculties. The principal noted that the very first faculty at McGill was the Faculty of Medicine. And we want to make sure that whether it's medicine or nursing or occupational therapy or engineering, that the professional faculties or law, the professional faculties are also in a preeminent position in the country and among our peers around the world. Underlying our ability to achieve these things is a focus on how we do certain things. So we have these big objectives, academic objectives, but they need to be underpinned with an eye toward cost efficiencies, an understanding of how we enroll our students at different levels and from different places, why it is impossible even for a well-funded public university, which we are not, we're underfunded, but why we can't rely on a political jurisdiction to do everything for us. We need to have philanthropy in the mix. We need to be competitive internationally on research and innovation, in particular that second part of innovation, linking it to impact on the society. And we want to make sure that your performance as individual professors gives you a satisfying career and enhances the reputation of the university, an alignment between your performance and the performance of the institution. So you can have a role in achieving strategic academic priorities. Your research, your teaching, and your service, three things that we will talk about during the course of the afternoon, all contribute to McGill's progress toward reaching our aspirations. There's a website, and I think this is all being distributed, so you'll have it available. Or it'll be off of the provost website after today's meeting. We'll follow up. You can access the website or send an email to give us your feedback on what you think we should be emphasizing in terms of of the new academic strategic initiatives. So that's a general introduction to where we stand with regard to our academic priorities. I didn't point out any very many specific areas. We don't want anyone really to feel excluded because we haven't included an explicit reference to your specific research areas. The broad interdisciplinarity that we're attempting to achieve, the broad scope of the way in which we've built our faculties and hired you, all play into making sure that we can achieve those top academic priorities. And there'll be work groups formed in the next couple of weeks, and we'll look forward, if you have the time, although I want you to orient yourself toward your teaching and research first, to make suggestions about things that you think we might be able to do as a research-intensive university with a clear sense of student-centeredness and a public purpose that will achieve our goals. So that's where we are in terms of our strategic academic plans. I'm willing to take any questions if you have any. I haven't had this much silence since I taught introductory statistics. Okay, well, we'll have a question and answer period at the end of the session as well. So we have Lydia is going to be next. So Associate Provost Lydia White, a professor of linguistics, who is the Associate Provost for Policies, Procedures, and Equity. We'll talk a bit about the requirements for reappointment and tenure. Thank you.
So, as Tony said, I'm going to talk more about things that concern you at the individual level, although some of them are parallel to what he's been saying at the institutional level. And what I would like to do is to give you a sense of some of the procedures and regulations that are in effect as far as reappointment and tenure are concerned, and also perhaps to give you some tips as to how to make the process smooth for each of you. There are two sets of regulations that are relevant. So for most of you, the regulations relating to the employment of academic staff, but for those of you that are librarians, there are your own regulations, and at the end I'll give you the website details for the web addresses for those regulations. Now, the academic ranks that we're talking about are assistant professor, or assistant librarian, associate professor, or associate librarian, and full professor, or full librarian. And it would actually help at this point if we could just have some sense of how many of you are in each of these categories in the room. So could you raise your hands if you are an assistant professor or an assistant librarian? That's good, because most of my talk is directed more to you than the others. What about associate professors or librarians? And full? Okay, so I will have things to say that are relevant for all of you, but the main focus will be on the assistant professors and librarians. So one thing to make clear is that at McGill, if you get tenure, you are also promoted to associate professor or librarian. And let's just think about stages on the way towards tenure. So the first stage, and this is true whether you are currently tenure track as an assistant professor or as an associate or as a full, the first step is reappointment, which takes place in your third year. So it's your work in the first 2 years that go towards considering you for reappointment. And then, as far as tenure is concerned, it depends what you've come in as to when your tenure consideration will happen. So, for assistant professors, it must be not late. It must be in your sixth year if you haven't gone up for early tenure. For associate professors, in your fifth year, and for full professors, in your fourth year. And the criteria that are taken into consideration for both reappointment and tenure are based on performance of your academic duties. And so in the case of professors, your academic duties are teaching, that's at both the undergraduate and graduate level, research or and other original scholarly activities and professional activities, and finally, other contributions to the university, usually called service. So you'll be getting presentations later this afternoon on all three of these areas. If you are librarians, you again have three academic duties, but they're not the same. So librarians, their main academic duty is position responsibilities. Then they may also have professional and scholarly activities, which may include research and other contributions again, so service. Now, these academic duties are not just significant for reappointment and tenure. They clearly are significant for these two, but also each year, well, if we're lucky, each year there is a merit exercise, and how you've been performing in your academic duties will sort of play into the question of how much of a merit increase you might be awarded. Looking further down the road, so promotion from after tenure, you're promoted to associate professor, but after that, the next step is promotion to full professor. And again, academic duties are significant, although in the case of that promotion, particular attention is paid to research and your international reputation. Another thing that where academic duties are important is when you become eligible for sabbatical leave, you really need to show that First of all, you have been performing, usually it's research that's going to be the most important, and that your leave is going to be related to that particular area of your academic duties on the whole. So the person who gets to assign your academic duties is not you. It's the head of your academic unit who has to take into consideration the needs of the department, what courses need to be taught, what students need to be supervised, and so on. So it's the chair, ultimately, or director or whatever, who has the final say in what each person's academic duties are. And just a reminder that you're expected to be engaged in academic duties throughout the year, and in particular from the 1st of September to the day after spring convocation. So if you need to go away to a conference during that time period, you must check with your chair or inform your chair so that people know where you are and that you've made alternative provisions for your teaching, say. Now, your academic duty, your academic unit must provide you with the expectations of the criteria for reappointment, and in many units they'll give it to you for tenure as well, in writing within 60 days of your initial appointment. And if you have been here 60 days and haven't received this, go and complain to your chair. But this is it's very important that you know right from the beginning what the expectations are going to be. So the standard of performance required for reappointment is not the same as the standard of performance for, not quite the same as the standard of performance for tenure. So, for example, in the case of reappointment, we're looking partly at promise that you will be the kind of person who's going to achieve tenure and evidence of progress towards that. So promise can count in the reappointment consideration, but promise doesn't count as far as tenure is concerned. So by the time you get to tenure, so assistant professors and other professorial staff, you have to demonstrate superior performance in any of the two categories of academic duties and at least reasonable in the third. And for the librarians, they must demonstrate superior performance in position responsibilities and one other duty and reasonable in the third. Just to remind you, I can't remind you of this too early, it's your responsibility to be preparing the case, pursuing the case for reappointment and tenure. So you have to establish that you've met the necessary requirements, the requirements that your department has told you that they are expecting. You have to put together a dossier. At the moment, the dossier for reappointment and tenure is similar. We're working on more extensive guidelines for what the dossier should look like. There's some guidance in the existing regulations, but maybe not enough. And I can't emphasize this too strongly. Start keeping track now. Keep your CV running all the time. Every time you give a talk, you get a paper published, put it down. Don't wait till 3 months before reappointment or 3 months before your tenure dossier is due. Think, what did I do 5 years ago? If you do it all the time, it will save you a great deal of stress later on. So there are a couple of ways in which, a couple of considerations that can come into play in sort of delaying reappointment and tenure, and they're all to do with leaves. So certain kinds of sick leaves, maternity leaves, leaves of absence. In the case of reappointment, if you have a leave before that, you have to get the provost's approval if you're asking for a deferral. In the case of tenure, periods of leave can be included or excluded by you, and you have to indicate at a certain point that that's what you want to do. You're under no obligation to put things off because of a leave, but you may do so. So at the bottom, I've just defined some of the different types of leave that there are. How am I doing for time? Okay. So there are certain other policies and guidelines that fall under my responsibility and or the responsibility of other officers of the university. And I just want to emphasize that you are, in fact, responsible for sort of knowing which ones might apply to you. So don't expect that you're going to be getting reminders from other people, although sometimes you might, but don't rely on getting reminders from other people that, oh, your tenure dossier is due next week, or it's time to apply for a sabbatic leave. Be on top of these yourselves. So the first regulations are the two that I've been drawing from up to now. But there are various different regulations about different types of leaves, sabbaticals, child-related leaves, and so on, leaves of absence. There are regulations concerning the conduct of research, concerning conflicts of interest, concerning academic integrity, concerning financial matters, certain mechanisms for dispute resolution. And many of these policies and regulations can be found on the Secretariat's website. Again, I'm assuming that these slides are going to be made available so that you can track this down. So, as I said before, it's important that you become familiar with internal and indeed external policies, for example, of the granting councils that are relevant for you. And don't be afraid to ask questions. Is there some policy that governs this particular behavior or issue? Are you subject to a particular policy? What does a policy mean? And by the way, I'm the person you can ask these questions of, but I'm going to give you a list of other people you can ask. But the fact is, that's partly what I'm there for, is to answer any questions you might have about McGill's policies and procedures. So, but before you ask me, try your chair, who will often just ask me, but they may well know the answer, so you can ask me. If there are issues more to do with human resources, you can, in fact, the Academic Personnel Office, which is also under the Provost's purview, will be able to help with many issues of that type. For research, the Office of the VP, Research and International Relations, and then for any governance issue, the Secretariat. So, in conclusion, I'd like to welcome you to McGill, and I hope this hasn't seemed intimidating. There will be lots and lots of reiterations, gradually getting more and more detailed as to what is expected of you as in your steps through your career. So, thank you very much. I'm happy to take questions if there's time. Yeah, apparently there is. No, also.
Are there questions? Just wanted to make one clarification on what goes on your CV. That lunch that you're invited to by the principal does not make it onto your CV. You have to be careful to make sure that you don't include just significant conversations, but outcomes could. So if the lunch leads to submitting a grant proposal that you're successful with, I'm sure that the vice principal research would be happy to work with you on getting that done. So I want us to make sure that you do take the time to think about these presentations. If you have questions, there'll be a chance to collect them all and do it toward the end. But if there's something you hear that's not clear, please just feel free to raise your hand and we'll make sure we get a microphone to you, or you just can speak loudly and we'll get to you. Now we're going to have a presentation on research from Vice Principal Rose Goldstein, who is relatively new to McGill herself, but a McGill graduate in the Faculty of Medicine and has been at Ottawa and Calgary before coming to McGill. So VP Rose Goldstein.
you. Good afternoon, and thank you, Provost Massey, for that kind introduction. And as he said, I'm relatively new here, so easy on the questions. I can see it's an easy crowd that way. Don't be afraid to ask questions. If I don't have the answer, we'll find it for you, which is kind of one of my themes. But really, welcome to McGill. The provost mentioned, I'm a McGill alum and left McGill 32 years ago and was very pleased to come back in December. So I really welcome you as a McGill alum and as a current McGill VP to this campus and to the rest of your career. I hope a very successful career here at McGill. And I'm certainly very excited to see your faces, and I hope you're excited to see ours and to see McGill campus. So as I say, welcome. And I think the important part of this slide is not just the pictures of the James Building where some of us reside, but really, and not my name and title, but really the caption of supporting your research. That's what we're here for. So that's the theme and what I want to leave you with today. And that's actually the pleasure of my office, which is I get to support you in the most exciting part, or at least some of the most exciting parts of your work. So I have that special privilege. What I'll talk to you about is myself, the Office of the Vice President, Research and International Relations, and also a major office that I oversee, which will be important to you in your research, the Office of Sponsored Research. So I abbreviate these fondly as OVPRIR, that's the Office of the Vice Principal, Research and International Relations, and OSR. So you'll hear those letters, especially the last few. And I may revert to the acronym. So Office of Sponsored Research in particular is the one that you will interact with for the mechanics, the day-to-day submission of grant applications and all of those important things that have to happen for you to get your funding and for your research to be properly supported. These offices work very much in collaboration. More and more, I hope that will be true. As well, I want to go back to one of Lydia's slides, I don't have a slide that says this, so I'll crib hers, that says, ask me questions. My office is there to answer those questions, as I am. I have an associate vice principal, Rima Rosen, who's also available. She's from Faculty of Medicine, but she's also available to all of you in my office to answer questions. I have a director of my office, Felix Moses, fairly new director, who's also there to help with questions, and the senior director of OSR, Mary Margaret and Klempa. So there's a lot of people who are there to answer your questions. That's what we're there to do, support. And I believe you also have, if you don't already have it in your hands, part of the handouts from today are a brochure about Office of Sponsored Research. It has more than my presentation and the names I just rhymed off, the names and numbers, the structure, the people to call for specific questions. So hopefully that will be a good guide. Having said that, email me if that's not working. Don't let it go too long, and I will make sure that your response gets to you. The part about Lydia's slide that's important is ask your chair or director, ask people closer to you in your faculty before you necessarily ask me, especially if anyone it's not clear to you who to ask. A lot of the research support also and service does occur in your faculties, particularly the larger ones, some of the smaller faculties, so do ask there. I don't want to pretend or I wouldn't hold out that my office does all the support for research at McGill. Clearly not. A lot of the support does lie in your faculty's excellent support, so you should actually ask your chair and director because they may well be the ones who have the support right there. But again, do not hesitate to ask us because we are also working very closely with your faculties to build that collaboration. And I would admit that we're in a transition, at least I am, in a learning phase with that. So sometimes, I apologize in advance if it's a little confusing where you should get the support, really ask. Ask there. Ask in my office. We will sort it out. And we're also trying to always figure out how to implement and how to support your research in a better way. So again, help us fine-tune where and when, what the point of contact, and where particular support should reside. So without going into that in more detail, and please do interrupt me if you want to ask a question during, there'll be some time at the end as well. So we're here globally in research services and VP research international relations portfolio to promote outstanding research, your outstanding research at McGill, We want to ensure that your research, our research, remains dominant on the world stage. By that, I mean as well that we do excellent research, that we're at the cutting edge, and that we're relevant. We're doing research that's answering important questions for the academy, for you and your disciplines, but also for the world and for our communities. We also are here to support the translation of your research discoveries into benefits for society, and we mean that broadly. That might be from bench to bedside and the clinical specialties to applications in the professions and also to commercialization and the market. So we are there to help you to realize that. The Office of the Vice Principal Research International Relations, and I won't read all of this, I think you'll get the slides, is here, is a smaller office in OSR that I'm going to describe to you. We're all located in the James Administration Building that I showed you in the first slide, which is actually a change. It's less than a year that we're all located there, so it is easy actually to not just email us or call us. You can come and visit us, and we're all under one roof, and I hope that that helps in terms of your integration at McGill and your ability to interact with us. We work very much on the strategic direction for research at McGill, and also our strategic interactions with the federal provincial government, with federal and provincial granting agencies, foundations, and other research sponsors. So we are working to advance the profile of McGill with those agencies, but also working to understand the workings and be the translator in between you, your faculties, and the agencies so that we can be, and you can be, at the highest level of success with those agencies. We assist in building relationships with industry to create partnerships of mutual benefit. So, and I'll give you some examples of those. So if you're interested in working with industry, there's people in your faculty who can help you. Do not shy away from doing that, but we are there to assist you in doing that. We hope also for it to go the other way. We work sometimes with industry or looking for specific researchers, specific areas of disciplinary expertise to help them answer questions that they're looking at. So then we will come to you to help us and to help make the partnership with industry. So this is very much a two-way working street. I and people in my office represent McGill on external boards and organizations that sponsor research, so we are often your face to that part of the world. We try to do the best job we can. I do welcome comments, suggestions, and advocacy points from yourselves, because we do represent you, not ourselves. I and people in the office work with other McGill senior leaders, including the provost and others you've met today, and faculty leaders, particularly deans and others, on pan-university, across faculty, inter-faculty research initiatives. And so that is really where my office, I believe, adds value. It's not so much in promoting the disciplinary research that you do and that you do in your faculties, that your chairs and deans and directors will support you to promote. They'll support you, we hope, on the inter-faculty, inter-institutional initiatives as well, but it's really there where a pan-university view is needed, where my office will be more involved. So again, in very simple terms, if that's the kind of initiative that you're interested in, even at this early phase on faculty, that's something that should come to my attention and my office to help us work with you to realize some of your bigger dreams where you want to interact with other faculties and work on interdisciplinary initiatives. We encourage you to come forward with that. McGill, I'm sure you all know, is an international university. We excel and lead in the international arena, and part of my office's role is to advance McGill's international standing and also develop through and also developing partnerships internationally, promoting international exchanges, and I'm sure you'll hear about student exchanges and faculty exchanges more from the provost's office, but we do, in our office, oversee the whole strategy on who, where, and what we partner on and establish exchanges on in the international sphere. My office also oversees research integrity and the ethical conduct of research, and we also work to develop and highlight research opportunities to our investigators. So we try to bring funding. We do bring funding opportunities to you and other broader opportunities to you, and we hope at times vice versa. And, of course, our overall goal is to provide you with efficient service and support. When we talk about promoting research, I meant to say at the beginning, it's not simply in the PR. I wanted to highlight this. It's not necessarily in the public relations PR view. We do, and we certainly are accused of, and we do like to promote your research successes. It's part of our role, but really by promote, we mean support and make it successful. So, again, we're here to help. A little bit more on the international partnership development. As I mentioned, it's many of you would know that McGill's an international university. We see ourselves in that stage. I'm sure many of you are perhaps recruited from international universities and come from other countries. Certainly our international students are, actually this is a little bit, I think it's a little out of date, it's probably closer to 20%. It hovers in that area. Our student population is 20% international, and that includes undergraduate, which I believe is still the highest in Canada, and as well it's a similar number for our graduate students from 160 countries. So we have a very significant international presence on campus, as well as we think, a very strong presence on the international stage globally. So we maintain in our office a robust program for international activities. We set the strategy. I've listed a few partnerships that my office has been very active in promoting, and you can read them. They are some examples of some of the top universities internationally, and we're always working focused, but working on several, not many, but two or three new partnerships at any one time, in our areas of priority with the top universities in the world, in parts of the world that we have decided are strategic focuses for Canada, for Quebec, and for McGill. So you have some of them listed on the slide, and these are just a select few, and there are others. I also mentioned industrial partnership development and already alluded to that we promote partnerships with small and medium companies, also with larger multinational companies. We help support researchers to develop these partnerships in the private sector, and we're often more and more recently helping the companies who come to us find researchers and find the groups to work with within McGill and Quebec. We're the other form that the research partnerships take form in more and more are in industrial chairs and promoting either alone or in partnership with other funding programs and philanthropy industrial chairs. You have a few examples of companies who've partnered with us in the last year or two to develop at least one chair. And we're also active in promoting student internships, so not just student exchanges, but we're very much interested in promoting the placement of our students, both undergraduate and particularly graduate students, in the private sector during their undergraduate and graduate education. So you have some examples of companies that we've worked with to establish specific agreements to facilitate those kinds of partnerships and student internships. Oops, I probably went too far. In the particularly in the interdisciplinary area, my office oversees a number of research centers and networks that are at McGill. This is just a small sampling of centers that either report to my office or in some way are supported by the office. We always have new research groups and centers being formed in the faculties, and most of those are within faculties. My office tends to concentrate more on the centers and networks that cross faculties and along the theme that I mentioned before, where we can add value across the faculties and across disciplines. And we feel these research centers are a very important part of the cutting edge of research at McGill. We encourage you to look into existing centers that are related to your field and maybe think about the creation of new centers and networks in the future. Networks in particular we have several types at McGill. Those of you that are new to Quebec, as I was, renewing my Quebec education, will learn about the FQRNT network centers. These are networks in science and natural science and engineering, and there's also similar with FRSQ in the health area networks. And there are several that are hosted and led at McGill, and many, probably most of the provincial networks, have McGill investigators as part of those networks. Some of the networks I listed here are McGill, important McGill-led, the ones at the bottom, all those centers, are McGill-led FQRNT-funded centers. They tend to be, they are Quebec networks. They network Quebec universities. Some of them network, at least two or three usually, some of them network with universities outside of Quebec and Canada as well. But the funding is essentially for networking of lead researchers in important interdisciplinary areas across Quebec universities. One of the ones I know more about, I'll mention, is the Centre for Interdisciplinary Research in Music, Media, and Technology that spans music, science, engineering, medicine, it's fondly called. They all have acronyms There's a test at the end, I'm sure, of today for you to learn all of them. This one's called Kermit for that. So these are centers that get funding externally, but we also provide support from our office as they're developing. We work as well on networks, national networks. Many of you, I'm sure, will have heard of National Centers of Excellence research networks, federally funded programs for $10 to $25 million. And McGill is actually right now in the competition for two of these centers, one in the medical area and one in led by the Faculty of Agriculture and Environmental Sciences and Biofuels. And the site visits for those are tomorrow, so that's probably why I mention them in Ottawa, because they are top of mind for me. So my office will be very involved in assisting the principal investigators and whichever department and faculty at McGill would like to lead one of those larger networks. So one day, maybe not tomorrow, maybe some of you will work with our office to lead and to either be involved in a larger Canadian or international network or to lead a network for McGill. So that is something which is the kind of initiative that my office gets very involved in. As I mentioned, my office does oversee research ethics and compliance of all sorts, human subjects, animal, and also financial compliance in conjunction with the Finance Administrative Services Group. So in human subject research, we have a human research ethics office. We are responsible for education and promotion of the highest standards for the conduct of human subject research. So, for example, those of you who will be involved in human subject research will receive education and will be interacting with this office on a regular basis, I can assure you. We have three research ethics boards, and you can learn more about that on our website. Between these boards, they review the ethics for all research involving human subjects at McGill and the teaching hospitals affiliated teaching research institutes. We are responsible for implementing and being compliant with the Tri-Council Agency Policy Statement for Ethical Conduct of Research Involving Humans. And we also are responsible that we are following, of course, the relevant federal and provincial laws. And Lydia already mentioned the university, she had their ethics policies, and we are responsible certainly for maintaining that we are in compliance, of course, with our own policies, et cetera, and that those policies are in keeping with the policies of our agencies. Yeah, any of you involved in research with human subjects will know or will soon know that that part of the compliance with research ethics is that no project really can begin, no project funds can be released until there's research ethics board approval in writing on the file. And this is really something that can be seen, I know, as a barrier, and maybe it's a good time for me to say we don't want our office to be a barrier. We recognize that sometimes research services offices and ethics offices feel like a barrier to you. I guess this is, we want to work with you so that's not the case. We want to be able to promote your research, and we want to be able to do this in an efficient fashion, but we also ask for, sometimes we beg, for your understanding that we have to be in compliance with all of these regulations. There are a lot of reasons that I think when one is calm, that these regulations actually do make sense. So having said that, I'd ask for your cooperation in some of these things that do seem difficult at times. Having said that, we do accept feedback. We know that we can do things better in keeping with the policies, and we also have, go back to the advocacy role, we do have a voice with government and with agencies, and if there really is reasonable, if there's reasonable cause for change, I'm very willing to help promote that as well. But in the meantime, we must be compliant. And this opening and beginning of projects is a very important issue, especially as you begin your career. So let's work together to make that happen efficiently. Ethics approvals, even once you've done that, you need to know that ethics approvals must be renewed annually. There was a time when that wasn't necessary and it wasn't upheld in writing and formally. You need to know, if you don't know already, that it is now a very formal and written renewal, and it must be done annually or your projects are in jeopardy and our compliance with the regulations are also in jeopardy. So you'll be in touch with us, I'm sure, and we'll be in touch with you about those issues. Similarly, animal-based research, my office is in charge of ensuring that McGill's animal-based research is carried out, conducted with the highest ethical standards, and also in compliance with all of the regulatory and compliance policies. And this includes the research, teaching, and testing, all projects on campus, and hospital-based research institutes like the human subjects research. We're responsible to provide training for animal care and handling, and we ensure ensure compliance with the Canadian Council for Animal Care, or CCAC, and of course our policies as well, which are on the website that Lydia mentioned. I should mention that on the annual, on the research with human subjects as well as animal-based research, we are reviewed and we are visited and routinely, and there are very detailed reports and very detailed studies of our compliance that are always ongoing. That said, it also means that these guidelines, the procedures, and even the policies are always, I think, rightfully evolving. And as that happens, we have to change our education, change what we do, and also change our compliance. So there is a lot of emphasis on this aspect in our office and at the university, and it is something we are always trying to improve in terms of being in compliance, effective, but efficient at the same time. There are other regulatory issues in ethics and compliance that I'll mention briefly. We are also responsible to ensure that research integrity is always maintained, promoting the ethical conduct of research by our whole scientific community, academic, and that includes you and non-academic staff and trainees as well. We have a research integrity office that works in conjunction with the Office of the Principal and the Provost on research integrity, ensuring we have the right policies in place, et cetera. And we are also responsible for investigations of allegations of research misconduct. So research misconduct allegations, if you have one or someone you work with has one, should be directed to this office as a first pass. We also oversee laboratory safety, and that means promoting safety and providing oversight in laboratories, and that includes all kinds of safety, including radiation, biohazard, laser, and other. Something you may not always be top of mind is the issue of controlled goods, and we are responsible to make sure that we follow federal laws related to import and export and access of sensitive materials, particularly across our borders, and the U.S.-Canadian border being probably the most common one. So now to the office that I fondly call OSR, or the Office of Sponsored Research, and the mandate of this office and the brochures speak very specifically to the detail. This really gets into the mechanisms and the specific supports for your grants that I'll really just give you a brief overview of. This office provides comprehensive information, services, and support to you, the members of the McGill research community, in your pursuit and management of funding for your research. It also ensures many of the things I just talked about, the accountability, compliance, and stewardship for the funds received from McGill research. This is a very schematic of the structure of OSR. Those of you who are not maybe returning to McGill may recognize that there's now one office for sponsored research when there were, and this is before my time, I think at least four, which had different offices, were under different leadership, and were also located in separate places at McGill. So I think it's really a very big accomplishment, again, before my time, and I was very grateful that now you have, as I mentioned, all the services in one building, in James Building, and under one senior director who reports to my office. So I think we've really tried to, and we really have brought five service groups together, and that you have this one-stop shopping in James Building in addition to your services in your own faculties. The five boxes represent five divisions of OSR grants, and each of them has an associate director. Again, I believe in your brochure you've got the names, and I can give you the names of the directors. Those are your contact people in these areas. We have grants and foundations that really oversee all the usual PI, single investigator grants grant applications and applications to foundations that provide funding. We have a federal infrastructure and provincial programs office. Many of you will recognize Canada Foundation for Innovation, CFI. Those kinds of grants are handled, preparation handled as that office, as are the, for example, the networks, the Quebec networks I mentioned, and basically grants that are more complex than single investigator, that involve infrastructure, matching funds, partnerships, etc., are handled in that office under Natalie Foisset. There's a contracts group where you will turn to mainly for your industrial partnerships, for assistance in industrial partnerships and contract signing for contract research, but they also help you, they will also be there to help you to partner with industry in general. There's a commercialization unit where you're going to want to go with your, or you're going to have to go with your new discoveries, new ideas. They will help you to to decide on inventions and whether when they should be patented. That is where you should be bringing your disclosures for new ideas, and that's where we will assist you with the next steps to commercialization, licensing, trademarking, copyright, spin-off companies, etc. The award management group is closely connected to the Grants and Foundation, liaises also with the finance and administration. It's actually currently under Olga Nieberger, under one director, and that's really where once grants are awarded, the initial funding and opening of accounts, et cetera, in conjunction with finance takes place. So that's really a very brief overview of what the Office of Sponsored Research is. They help you identify funding opportunities. They'll help promote them to you so that, for example, if you have questions of where can you apply for funding for certain things, this is an office that really has a very good knowledge inventory of where the opportunities are. Please call them. They'll help you liaise with the funding sources and the partners throughout the time of your research project, so you're not on your own. You have help. They have a relationship with most of the agencies in Canada and elsewhere that we apply to. They will help you in larger project development and team development and see you through networks and renewals of networks and also help you negotiate contracts and agreements with funding agencies and partners. They're responsible to review and sign research proposals on behalf of the university or as a delegate of the university president. This is a bit of an important point I want to dwell on for a minute. So I think people sometimes mistake the need for a signature from the president, or in our case it's the principal, with the need to go and visit the principal in her office and talk to her and get the signature. So I just want to dispel that right now. This, even when it says that all of this is, suffice to say, delegated down to me and delegated down to others. So when you need a signature on a grant, the first place is likely your chair, your dean, and then they will give you guidance as to where it has to go next. And most likely it's the Office of Sponsored Research. They will navigate if it needs higher signatures. You don't have to take it on yourself. So use this office to help you for getting your grant signed. But do respect their deadlines for getting the grants to them, even if it's draft, so that we know, so you can get your signatures on time without having that very famous, we've all been through it, last-minute panic. Do it and on time with their deadlines and work with us to make that happen. You will have a better result, and you will have your grant signed by the right person on time. We really do it to help you out. We'll advise us, as I said, on project management. We're there to help you with the complicated projects, to help with the business side and budgets on the larger, more complicated projects, and to help. And we do try to, we do provide a full range of technology analysis and support on new inventions, etc. All of this, I should say, especially on the commercialization technology analysis side, we hope to be undergoing quite a lot of change in the next year or so. So we will be changing that as well. You have specific information sessions with OSR, so these are the people who really deliver that service are there. I know one was last week, so maybe some of you missed it, but there's some this week and next week as well, and the times and dates are on here. I encourage you to, if you're going to be actively involved in research, to go there because they actually really know a lot more about what I just said than I do, and they will be able to answer your questions for the Office of Sponsored Research. So thank you for your time, and here are my office coordinates and OSR. We are accessible on the website too. Happy to take questions. Sorry? Oh, so I have 15 minutes? Okay, I thought you were giving me the signal to have that my time was up. Oh, good.
I was trying to just make sure you had a good time.
Oh, okay, good. Well, we have 15 minutes for questions, and I'm not late. I thought I was, so. Yes.
This is a good moment.
Yeah. Yes, and maybe questions for Lydia, too, or whoever spoke before me. And maybe get into your interactive phase. Yes. And please say your name and maybe what faculty you're from.
Hi, my name is Kirk Bevan. I'm from the Faculty of Engineering. So could you talk more about those international collaboration support? You know, Canada, California, that sounds interesting. How does that work? Can I get money from it, et cetera?
So I guess without getting into specifics, as each one is a bit different, I'll mention the maybe the overall theme and how my office can help. So the larger collaborations I mentioned, Generally speaking, the way they work are that we have agreements with that. In the case of California, that one predates me. I didn't actually set it, and Tony may know more about it. It's what with the University of California and Canadian universities. It wasn't just McGill, but McGill was one of the leads. Was one of the leads with UBC, and the way that so that one's a bit more complicated because it's the whole country. But in general, these are so you know, you will as researchers form international collaborations with colleagues. You probably already have them. People you work with, so what I call kind of on the ad hoc basis. We're here to support with that if you need any help. But it's more, these larger ones are more at the institutional level where we have agreements to work together and where we have worked, this is the key, to bring funding up. We have brought some funding together, often internally from McGill and some of these institutions and or without external funding agencies to fund seed projects. On those you will see, you should pay attention. First of all, you should all be on the OSR listserv where you get the calls for proposals. Internal and external deadlines, et cetera, are on that listserv, and they'll come every evening almost on your email, because I get them as well. And these international partnerships, where there are opportunities for seed funding, will come on that listserv. So, for example, you might see call for proposals, Canada, California, collaboration, looking for proposals, and sometimes they'll be specific on nanotechnology, green ICT, this sort of, you know, their topics, information will be there with the contact person. So again, it'll be your responsibility to keep an eye out for that. Having said that, if you're interested in specific collaborations, specific countries, specific areas, that's where you get in touch with the person in charge of international in my office and tell them, and then we work with you. Because we'll also reach out to you as we're building the partnerships, looking for the expertise that the other country or the other university is also looking for. So I hope that answers your questions. But what's a little, what I think is strong and what's interesting about these collaborations are that we try to build them on funding opportunities so that you can actually start some real work with your colleagues abroad. That, does that help? Good. But if you're interested, get in touch with the people international. They'll work with you on new ones as well. I think there was another question. Sorry. You can pass.
Sylvain Bayet, Faculty of Medicine. You were talking about internal deadlines for submitting grants to a funding agency. What would be the typical internal deadline with respect to the institution deadline? Related to that question, does your office submit the grant proposal to the funding agency, or do we have to take care of it ourselves?
So I think the answer is really it depends, right? It's not the same for every kind of competition. And I really couldn't off the top of my head tell you. That's the thing. Those are things that that are on the website, and the people at OSR are really much more in control of, and they can change them. We try to be reasonable on the standard grants. It's not very long. They get mostly signed in your own faculties because some of that's delegated, and it might be a few days or a week. Where it is much longer is in the provincial, the grants that tend to go to the provincial programs, CFI. There we're talking about months, you know, weeks and months, and really process that where my office actually really is working on the grants with you. There it's not just simply we need to be aware and know that your dean signed off, like on ordinary grants, the principal investigator-driven grants. On the larger, more complicated grants, we actually really need to be involved in the writing of the grants at times. We offer support to the writing of those grants, so you want to be in touch with us earlier. So I would actually, there, like it certainly depends. I would just say make yourself aware early, and when in doubt, contact OSR. And that's, I know, what they will tell you. We'd much rather you contact us too early to ask all those questions, then we'll let you know when you need to. But those are beyond simply signing. That is really where we need to be involved in the grant with you. For two reasons. We want to help you. We want to support you. We want to know what we have to provide. But we also don't want you working on something. Those projects, many of them are institutional. So the institutional projects like CFI are submitted by us because they are applications for chairs, for example, are usually submitted by the institution. So they will be instituted. They will be submitted by my office. And there are times when we have quotas. We have to choose. We have to be strategic. We have caps. We don't want you working on applications, and we have seen this, that we cannot submit. So we want to work with you early so that your work is also efficient and effective. So early, early, early. I just can't emphasize that enough. And before long weekends, et cetera. You know, having said that, I think we're pretty well organized, I think, having been in other universities. We have a series of delegates. There's always, people panic. They hear I'm out of town or the principal's out of town. Never panic. We are always covered. We always have someone who has signing authority. Just get it to us on the deadlines. We will get the right person to sign. That's it. Thank you.
We're just before we take a break, I just wanted to emphasize what Natalie said. Ask questions. Don't hesitate. There are really no stupid questions, and we will endeavor not to give you stupid answers, right? So just ask the questions that come up as they come up. I'd also just like to take a moment, if you noticed that we had people who helped organize this, and we always wait till the end to thank people, but I'd like to do it now before we take our break. This whole endeavor has been organized by Natalie Cook, who is the Associate Provost for Academic Staff, together with Scott Kushner and Luke in the background, and Nancy. So we've had four people working really hard to try to put together an orientation session and herd our cats of administrators to make sure they could be here to help you out. In addition, you may have noticed we mentioned the importance of collegiality at McGill, and outside there was a table called the McGill Association of University Teachers, and its president, John Galati, was there. So it's important to have a chance to talk to them about what they do. For example, Lydia pointed out that every year there's a merit exercise. Well, it's with a salary increase, and the administration has discussions with MAUT about that. So there's at least one role that they play. There also are sometimes disputes between individuals and administrators about the way in which the university runs, and MAUT provides services related to advising and other things. So just to let you know that there is a sense of and the importance of collegiality in the way in which we do things. The questions that Rosie raised on research are really important for you to get an answer on. Each of you will know that the principal counsel to which you apply depends on your discipline. So if you're a social scientist or in the humanities, it's SSHRC, for those of you coming from outside of Canada. If you're a health researcher, it's CIHR, the Canada Institutes for Health Research. If you're a natural scientist or engineer, it's the Natural Sciences and Engineering Research Council, or NSERC. Those are the three principal areas where you as individuals will be submitting grants as principal investigators or in small groups. There are also provincial equivalents that are now being merged into a single entity to provide research opportunities for teams of people. The question on deadlines is spot on. You really do have to think ahead as you're presenting your grants, because while there are delegates who will sign until the very last possible moment, they have to have some chance to actually review it. Accepting a grant from one of these agencies or from any foundation or industry contract, etc., actually places a legal obligation and a fiduciary responsibility obligation on the university. That's why there has to be that sign-up, because we have to make sure the funds are administered in a way that reflects the purposes for which you've applied for and say you're going to use the money. It's not just your money. It's your money, but it's in trust because you signed a contract, and we accept the responsibility to make sure that you actually do that, so that you spend it appropriately. So it's important for you to get your research grants in early. As Rosie said, the bigger grant applications will be coordinated through her office, because we have sometimes to go through the provincial government to even get on the table in Ottawa for consideration. So you have to make sure that there is coordination. Seek help locally. Look to your professors in your department, your departmental chair, your deans. They can provide you with a lot of experience about how to get onto the track that will make you successful in getting grants to support your research. And every one of you, tenure track assistant professors, associates, and full professors, need to be thinking about ways to support your research or the graduate students who will work with you. So it's important that you get on track to apply for research grants early. It's much more difficult for librarians, but they provide good support in terms of the grants that other people present. So think about how we can help you, the things you've just heard from Rosie, how we can help you to be more successful at your careers and in building up your research credentials. So that's what we really want you to do, is to think about those research activities. In addition, as Lydia pointed out, what you're doing is building up your curriculum. You're building up the case to be made for why we know why we hired you, and now you're going to make the case for why you should stay. And we want to help you to do that, because we want your careers to be not only successful but happy while you're here. So we'll try to do what we can to help you get launched in the right direction. But you can help us by being by anticipating some of the deadlines and by becoming informed about the things that are out there for research opportunities. And don't just stick to the councils. As Rosie said, through the Office of Sponsored Research, there are many unexploited opportunities available for funding, and you should become aware of them and think about them. And sometimes those interdisciplinary collaborations take you in very different directions than you thought you might go in. So do take up the principal on her invitation to a reasonably priced lunch. In the meantime, we're going to take a 15-minute break, for which there's coffee outside. And, again, you can pick up the conversations that I interrupted before we started the afternoon. Thank you.